Is it ever right to aim to be arrested to raise awareness of the climate crisis, or does this risk feeding into the bragging rights culture that permeates some green protest movements? And does that culture detract from what could be a valid message? What do you think about the issue of when we discuss with people about the climate crisis and they agree we need to do something, yet they still book a flight and go on holiday and not change anything?
This is the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast with me, Stuart the Wild Man Mabbott, and
me, William Manclow. Thanks very much for being with us. Yeah, I have woken up, haven't I now, Stuart? Mm.
And we try and explore and delve into and examine the big challenges we all face. And today's two questions, listener questions we got, one is from Ivy in Worthing in West Sussex, and the other one is Mary in Gorsehill, Swindon in Wiltshire. So hang on and we'll let you know what the subject matter is. We try and have the conversational style and real discussions, real opinions and authentic views. Just wondered if you could remember all that. Anyway, we try and keep the big issues in your consciousness and we try and break them down into bite-sized chunks and we try and come up with actions to address what we discuss.
We do.
We are not experts, William.
Oh, we try not to be, at least. Mm. We come across as experts because we have strong opinions.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's as close as we get to expertness.
Yeah, exactly. So the first question is from Ivy in Worthing. Let's have a read of that.
Yes. So, Ivy, thank you very much. I seem to remember Ivy asking us, you know, saying something along the lines as we overanalyze her questions.
Mm. A long time ago.
Whenever Ivy sends a question, we know we have to really take our time on every single part of it. And I'm doing it right now. I'm waffling, of course, as always. Anyway, so Ivy, thanks very much for your question. And Worthing's a lovely part of the country. Ivy says, is it ever right to aim to be arrested to raise awareness of the climate crisis, or does this risk feeding into the bragging rights culture that permeates some green protest movements? And does that culture detract from what could be a valid message? I think there's straight off the bat, I would say there's a stigma attached to being arrested. Mm. People don't. If you're arrested, you're a criminal. That's not true, is it?
Because you've been convicted.
You've been detained on suspicion of something. Being arrested is not a conviction, is it?
No.
So, but that is synonymised with it. It's a bit like saying, cyclists don't pay road tax. Mm. Yeah, but you don't pay road tax. You pay vehicle excise duty, but you call it road tax.
Yeah. The interesting thing is we often don't talk about the countryside because listeners send in questions and it takes us away and we try and bring it back to the environment. But this clearly is got an environmental angle to this.
Yes.
Let's look at it from the top. Is it ever right to aim to be arrested to raise awareness for the climate crisis, or is that feeding into the bragging rights culture that permeates some green protest movements?
Yeah. Well, do you think... go on.
Is it ever right? Well, you can't... let's reframe that. Is it always wrong to?
Yes.
Again, opportunity. You need to look at it by case-by-case basis and look at the motivation behind getting arrested. Because if it's feeding into the bragging rights culture that I do see... I'm going to name an organisation. I'm not saying all branches are like this. But I knew some people involved with Greenpeace up in Manchester, and their whole the whole point of their meetings was to brag about, I've done this, I've done that, I've been arrested for this. What a wanker I am!
Yes, we've got an explicit episode. It's inevitable. It has to happen at least one of them, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, it does feed into that. So you just need to work out again, what's the motivation to be arrested? Is it good to raise awareness? Might be in some instances.
I would say going into something with the express intention of getting arrested is very different than going into something thinking, I'm going into this situation and I could be arrested. Mm. You know, there's a chance that I will be arrested. Because if you go into that situation with a chance of being arrested, you think that, you actually will try and mitigate against not being arrested. Mm. It doesn't maybe stop you that happening because the police will interpret something in a particular way, particularly if they've got pressure to stop you from doing what you're doing. Mm. But it does make going into it with the intention of being arrested does actually, it does invalidate the message because you're actually stopping the message getting out for the reason of you're being arrested, you're a criminal, but also that you're being stopped. What you're actually talking about and what you're actually, you're putting out there is actually being halted.
Does it always invalidate the message?
If the intention is to get arrested, I would say it would be, yeah. If your intention is to go out there and get arrested, that's the wrong intention then, surely.
What about if your intention is to raise awareness through the arresting process?
That's a different thing entirely, isn't it? And that's nothing to do with green issues. That's to do with more with judicial and policing issues, isn't it? I would say.
Yeah, it's. My only thought on this with reading this question cold from there, because we don't really read these questions before we come on to record. I do the bit, the bragging rights culture. When I'm involved with have been involved with various protests or various meetings or various things, I'm very aware of the very fast evolving culture. It's like a fucking petri dish, some of these meetings. You can see that just evolving before your eyes.
Yes.
You know, and I just think, well, I don't want to be part of that. But then I become part of the subculture and in the human perspective of what that subculture is. Oh, you're the leader, Stuart, of the subculture. No, I'm not. I'm just being subversive.
Then, and this isn't just in this realm either. It's not just in the realm of the bragging rights thing. No. You get it in football culture. The football culture of, oh, you know, I got arrested at this football ground. I got arrested at this football ground. I got arrested for this reason. Mm. Oh, I got thrown out of this football ground because of this reason. Mm. And so it's like, yeah, when bragging rights. Yeah. Are they really bragging rights as well?
Yeah,
I got arrested 10 times. Well done. Well done.
I think it's an insight into people's, overall intellect. Anyway, let's move on to Mary in Gorzeal, Swindon. Gorzeal with a Z.
Gorzeal with a Z. Yeah.
The second question of this again, we've not read this, so we don't know how closely related these subjects are. We put these on as they come in.
Exactly. Do you feel like tackling this, Stuart?
What, reading this?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't read one for a long time. Let's have a go then.
Such a privilege.
Yeah. What do you think about the issue of when we... No, you're going to have to read this. I'm reading words that means nothing to me.
I just wanted to give you an opportunity. Yeah. It wasn't a test. It was, I just wanted to give you an opportunity.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
Because usually Susie Darrington pushes in and gets the question out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mary, thank you very much. From Gorzeal with a Z. What do you think about the issue of when we discuss with people about the climate crisis and they agree we need to do something, yet they still book a flight and go on holiday and not change anything? Do we keep saying the same message that could get boring and cause arguments or vary it? Do we change our message and explore the common ground and build from there? Do we ask them what their barriers are to making personal changes when it's agreed we need to do something? Or is there something else we should put in the mix? Also, within family conversations, environmentalists seem to be perceived as bullying and evangelical. So how do we keep these conversations happening so they are more inclusive and exploratory? Surely there's a way of talking about this stuff within families without arguing and perpetuating the us and them baseline. The us and them baseline comes back again.
Yeah, you mentioned us and them in a previous question. Oh, I think it was...
It was Elaine.
Elaine in Telford.
Elaine in Telford, yeah. In the previous episode.
Yeah. Okay, we try and break these things down into bite-sized chunks, so let's have a go.
There's a lot of questions in here.
Yeah, so let's start from the top. What do you think about the issue when we discuss with people about the climate crisis and they agree we need to do something, yet they still book a flight and go on holiday and not change anything? Well, I think that's the common behaviour is, well... Little old me, what's the difference? Well, I'm not going to do this if it impacts on my life. I've known people who do make those decisions and not fly, and then you see them a few years later, and they're suddenly they caught up. And, you know, they're suddenly flying a lot. Hmm. What do I think when people, yeah, we need to do something, but and then don't do anything? I think we an action straight away here is we always need to try and do something.
Yes, whatever that is. I mean, yeah. I still fly. A couple of days after this recording, I'm flying myself.
To Germany.
To Germany, yes, to the city of Hamburg. Mm. But in my small way, I try to reduce how much I consume at home.
Mm.
So I reduce how much water I consume at home.
Mm.
I'm very conscious of having the power that we use, the gas, the electricity that we use. I don't own a car. I walk as much as I possibly can do. So I can. I try to do them. I try to do everything more, much more on a local level. On the things that I can really can control. Yeah. I still want to go away. I still want to. I still want to travel. And maybe that's the wrong decision to make. But
well, it's, and again, it's not that what you do, it's how you do it. So maybe just spend a bit of time. Well, let's have more time traveling, so I can travel slower.
And that's again that we do try to do that as well.
Mm. What is the rush?
Exactly. Well, the rush often is that, to answer that question, the rush is often that, you know, how much time we actually have to actually go away, to actually be on holiday, can sometimes be limited because of work commitments and life commitments. So
the next part of Mary's question relates to this podcast. Do we need to keep saying the same message? Do we keep saying the same message that could be boring and cause arguments, or vary it? I think when we're doing this podcast, we're very aware of the types of words we each use and try and vary it to not make it boring. And yes, I think in real life, we need to vary the message, vary the wording, vary the audience, vary our attitude.
And the language is so important. And vary the language and talk to, use the language of the group that you're talking to and understand it. I saw a video yesterday. It's a public speaker and motivational coach, and he said that when he went to America and pitched, because he lived in Australia, he's originally from Malaysia, I believe, and moved to Australia, and you have to pitch things very differently in America than you do in Australia
and different parts of America.
In the US, you have to be, they expect you to sell yourself, like oversell yourself, because that's just how the American culture is, whereas Australia, if you tried that same method, they'd be like, "Well, I'm not having him because he's too big. He's too up himself. Yeah, it's a different culture. So you have to use different language in different circumstances.
So do we change our message and explore the common ground and build from there? I think we can change our message. Maybe or the messenger needs to just have a narrower audience, and you know, who can cope with the same message. Common ground is always a good thing. It helps people step towards us, and it helps us step towards them.
The idea of common ground, if it goes on to the next part of the question, do we ask them what their barriers are to making personal changes when it's agreed we need to do something? I think when you ask somebody what their barriers are, that's a really difficult question. You're actually almost confronting them. And confrontation, and it's a confrontational language if you're not careful. We should try and seek the common ground in that situation. I'm in this situation. You seem to be in a similar situation to me. How can we work this out together?
Maybe share your barriers.
Yeah, exactly.
To get them to think, well, actually, this person's being honest.
Yeah, because it can, you know, for example, if you want to fly less, or you want to drive less, or you want to consume less, how did I overcome that barrier? How did I overcome the barrier of not owning a car, for example, and share that experience? And then also include the barriers that do exist. It's not that owning a car or not driving so much is suddenly, not owning a car is suddenly going to make your life amazing, that there aren't going to be barriers. Of course there are going to be barriers, and share those barriers with the other person.
But your existence is a threat to some people because, you know, instead of explaining how you can survive without a car, they see it as a threat to them. I mean, you're not talking about them, you're talking about you.
Talking about myself, but
yeah,
that. And it's also, I think it comes back to the preaching thing as well. You feel that you're being preached to. And I try not to do that when I talk about these sorts of things, because that doesn't get you anywhere. Because when you start preaching to somebody, feel like they're being preached to, they're very likely to switch off.
There are some people out there, even if you're not preaching to them, they just don't want to talk about the subject.
Yes.
And because their mind is closed, whether or not it's they have these emotional or physical barriers,
yes,
or they just don't have, or the intellectual barrier, they don't have the intellect to sit down and analyze themselves.
Yes, exactly, and also the time and energy. I'll go back to that again as well. But yeah, it can be anything. But let's go on to this next bit here, which is also within family conversations.
Is there something else we can throw into the mix?
Oh, yes.
I would say silence. Give space. you know, let someone speak and then leave a space.
Should we leave a space on the podcast right now?
Next section. Also within family conversations, environmentalists seem to be perceived as bullying and evangelical. So how do we keep these conversations happening so they are more inclusive and exploratory?
You can change environmentalists for vegans. You can change environmentalists for people who don't drive.
Yeah.
So the environmentalist is, I like that phrase, but it can be changed for anything. So it can be perceived as bullying and evangelical because that's what they think is happening rather than somebody just talking about, it goes back to the whole thing of you were saying about people who don't drive so much.
Mm.
It's like an attack almost.
Yeah.
But it's not an attack. It's just them talking about their own lives.
When I'm visualizing this family group, that Mary talks about here, I'm just imagining around a dinner table, a Thanksgiving or at Christmas dinner or something.
Mm.
And I can see, fly on the wall, the people who are shoving the meat down their throats, eating dead flesh. I'm not being evangelical there. They're going to see somebody who's vegetarian as being awkward and challenging. But they might be just sat there, just, okay, you're eating what you're eating, I'm eating what I'm eating. They're just sat there, they're existing.
Yeah, I've tried to resist labels myself and labelling other people and definitely labelling myself because, I lead a relatively vegan, I have a vegan diet mostly, but it does verge in vegetarianism as well. So I have some dairy on a semi-regular basis. I do not try to describe myself as a vegan or a vegetarian unless it's pertinent to the conversation because of this very issue, because it can seem as being even evangelical or being perceived as bullying. I've been in situations where somebody I'm with, like, oh, I'm sorry, I still eat meat. I'm like, my immediate reaction is like, why are you apologising for? You have nothing to apologise for. That is your choice. I'm not going to judge you for that choice. I'm going to do what I do. And my wife, who is fully vegan, and I'm sure if I describe my wife as being fully vegan, I'm sure when you listen to that sentence, you probably are imagining a certain type of person. What we try to do our best is to show that it's possible.
Mm.
Not even lead by example. Just show this life is possible. It is possible to eat less meat. It is possible to go fully vegan and still have good food and still have junk food as well in particular, which people do like. It is possible to drive less. It is possible to live a life without a car, for example.
I mean, not to be
evangelical about it.
Yeah, I mean, I never call myself a vegetarian or vegan or anything. I just eat vegetarian options, vegan options. I eat fully meat options. It's not a label that I put on myself. It's a label people put on me. So I would say is maybe an action here is when you're with family, and you've got somebody you think is trying to inflict their opinion on you and being evangelical. Maybe actually you're the one being bullied and you're the one being evangelical. Because I remember being at a so-called family event once and talking about comedy. And I was saying, I don't like this comedian because, it's been done before. And I gave some examples, and then the person said, I don't like those examples. I don't like those examples you get. They're not very funny. It doesn't matter. They might not be very funny, but it's been done before. And it was sort of like, I don't like your humour, Stuart, because you like this person. I'm not saying I like that person. I'm saying that's been done before. So the title you put on somebody may be completely inaccurate. It's maybe what you are bringing to the table yourself. They might be being evangelical as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But you're putting a label on that person, aren't you?
Yeah.
And maybe you should just give them a name. The last part of this, actually, we're talking about families here. Now, when we think about family, we think about the people who are directly related to us. And that can be through blood, but also through adoption, that type of thing. But I think you can widen that out to, just read the last bit here. Surely there's a way of talking about this stuff within families without arguing and perpetuating the us and them baseline. That's also within a community as well. A community is a family in so many ways. So when you're in a community space, in a community meeting or whatever, however you can say it. Yeah. Think about it from that point of view as well, not just within your own family.
I'll read that again. Surely there's a way of talking about this stuff within families without arguing and perpetuating the earth and them culture. Yeah, everybody around that table at that event needs to actually be engaged with, let's actually talk about a range of different stuff and actually listen to the person who's talking. And actually listen to how you are reacting to how that person is talking. And then you might actually start to break down the us and them. You're just exploring things.
Yeah, there's in I was just thinking of the student union in Oxford, and the debates that I've seen there always seem to be, from what I've seen from them, is they're trying to prove the other side wrong. Always.
And yeah, but that's the debate side, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But that debate doesn't ever seem to have a resolution, or doesn't even
never will, because it's motivated to keep finding the separation.
Exactly. But that's the problem with that version of debate, because you're not really coming up with any middle ground solution.
I remember when I was at school, I used to have an English teacher called Mr. Ricks. He was one of the best teachers I ever had, but he was like a short-term stand-in. He had this handlebar moustache. Great, great teacher. Very, very good. And I remember he used to... he set up this debating thing in English. He would pair you up and he'd give you a subject. And he'd find, and you had to argue for or against. And I remember the two subjects I was given. I still remember this, was the Channel Tunnel, because it was being built.
Mm-hmm.
I was put to be against it. And then there was I don't know where who came up with this, but the subject was. Is it right to culturally be against gypsies? Are they a bad race? And I was for. I was put on the for camp. That introduced me. I was probably about, I'm trying to remember how old I'd have been, about 13, 14. And it just introduced me to exploring an argument that you don't necessarily want to agree with. And I think that's what he was doing, the other perspective. And I remember, and he pulled me aside afterwards. He said he wasn't trying to make me feel good about myself, but he said, it was very good what you said. And it was about the Channel Tunnel, and I was meant to be against it. And there was this school of thought that things like rabies would come in because foxes would come into the tunnel. And I said, well, my point here is to argue against the Channel Tunnel, but I can't argue that the foxes are going to be bringing in rabies, because, you know, they have a territorial size and they don't go too far from where they live, their hole in the ground. So, you know, it's 20-odd miles, that tunnel, 20-odd miles plus, because it doesn't just pop out either side of the water, it goes inland.
Yes.
Fox isn't going to go all that way. And he said to me, you know, I could see you were challenged. You were trying to be on one side or the other. But he said, life isn't like that. I still remember that now.
Because life isn't like that.
And that's the problem with debating societies. Even if you feel that you agree with the other person, you cannot say that.
I would say the point of the debate...
Sometimes.
The point of something like the Oxford Union, student union debate, is not the debate itself, it's the theatre of it.
Yeah.
It's the theatre.
Oh, absolutely. I remember this at school as well. There was... I don't know what he's doing with himself now. He never quite fitted in. He was a little bit too posh for us. Or so we thought. Darren Finlay was. Actually, I don't think he was, because I think we were... 10, 11, 12. I don't think he was posh. Actually, looking back, I think he was quite effeminate, and it wouldn't surprise me if he grew up to be gay. I don't know. I haven't met him for 30 years, but I'm just intrigued. Anyway, the perception there. We were debating. We had this debating thing as kids, and we had to do it as... we had to do these assemblies, and each class had to do a different assembly each week. And the subject of Darren's class was debating. And he was quite good at drama as well. And he stood up and he pretended to be somebody in the Houses of Parliament.
Okay.
And I remember I was only about 10 and I said to my teacher, Darren Finlay was great, wasn't he? And the teacher rolled their eyes. But Darren Finlay was just playing a role and he was just very good at arguing and acting somebody who was debating. Debating is not necessarily, it can be too defensive.
When you said Darren Finlay, you don't know what happened to him. I had Googled that name. There's actually an actor called Darren Finlay. You never know.
No. Anyway, so the perception of a kid was he was very posh, but I think he was maybe just effeminate. I don't know. Anyway, Darren Finlay, come out of the woodwork. Say hello. Anyway, so that's maybe how you stop the us and them cultures in families. And then once you've mastered that, go out into the big wide world.
Yeah, I agree.
So going out into the big wide world, who are the people who are going to ask in questions in the next episode, William?
Firstly, thank you to Ivy and Mary. Thanks for all your questions. Ivy, I don't think we analysed their question enough, to be honest with you. We analysed Mary's question more than Ivy's. Yeah. I hope we didn't offend you there.
If we didn't offend her, we got to try harder.
Try harder, yes. So the next two questions are coming from Alan in Northway in Oxford here in England. Here in Oxford, I should say. And then it's Vandana, both returning. So Vandana is from India, of course. Both returning questions, and we're looking forward to recording those episodes, Stuart.
And interestingly, the episode after that, Alan and Vandana are back again. We've got a nice pair of questions.